You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it.
I'd like to thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Ask a Black Doctor with Dr. Bukasi Dubé. You are listening to The Numbers, 96.7 FM, KNUM, right here in Portland, Oregon. And hopefully you are subscribed to us and listening to us on the podcast. You don't want to miss an episode there. If you have, our previous episodes are located right there in the podcast. You can also go to The Numbers with a Z.FM and listen to all the episodes there. Doc, how are you doing today, sir?
Man, I am doing well. It's good to see you. It's good to be back, you know, having this conversation.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to what we're talking about today.
Yeah. So who do we have with us today?
Today we have a special guest, Dr. DeMello, Raul DeMello. He's an MFM fellow at OHSU. Well, I should be more specific, right? What does MFM fellow mean? He's an OBGYN who's specializing in high risk pregnancy. Raul, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Excellent. So you said you specialize in high risk pregnancies. I can imagine that you're getting all types of questions, especially with the type of information, some of the confusion that's out there right now in the media as far as vaccines and how that can affect pregnancies.
Yeah, and that's correct. You know, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG, and the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine, which are the two kind of bodies that really put forth recommendations for clinical practice for OBGYNs, both came out now, it's about almost a month ago, and recommended that all pregnant moms get the COVID-19 vaccination. Mm.
That's great news.
That was awesome that they came out and did that, because previously it had been a soft recommendation, right? We didn't have enough data.
Yeah.
And just being able to gather all that data and present it in a way that the CDC, FDA, and ACOG could all come on the same page and say this is something that they strongly recommend as it's solid.
So what's changed? What was presented in the data? What was collected in the data and studied in order for them to be able to give the strong recommendation? Because I'm sure there are people who, again, are going to be skeptical and say, well, they're saying that now. Why weren't they saying that before?
Right. So, and I think those recommendations came from a number of different studies that have been put out, and there's different groups around the country and actually around the world that have been, looking at moms that received the vaccine in pregnancy. In particular, there's a group at Harvard that was measuring the level of antibodies that mom was creating when she got the vaccine, and then also measuring the cord blood from babies that were being born to moms that were vaccinated. And they found that there was a correlation and that those antibodies were being transferred, mom's antibodies were being transferred across the placenta to the fetus in utero and giving those babies theoretically protection from COVID-19. And that was some of the basic science that laid the foundation for this recommendation.
That's amazing.
Yes. So just to add on, just to tag on what Dr. DeMello just said, there are a few things that that occurred, right? The mm-hmm. CDC and the FDA monitoring system, the vaccine adverse event reporting system, the VAERS mm-hmm. system, did not identify any issues with vaccines and pregnancy. Then you have the VSAFE COVID-19 vaccine safety registry, which also provided plenty of data showing that vaccines are safe in pregnancy. And along with that, the CDC's vaccine safety data link, the VSD, and the Clinical Immunization Safety Assessment Project, which also is a collaboration between the CDC and seven medical research centers looking at vaccine, COVID-19 vaccines in pregnancy. And all these systems of monitoring showed us that these vaccines are incredibly safe in pregnant women and in women that are breastfeeding.
I think it's important to, you know, make sure we're distilling this and breaking this down as far as possible.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, dealing with the, you know, the skepticism and distrust. So basically what we're talking about here is the time had to pass. Studies had to be done in order for people to come back with results. There's no quick and easy answer. This is an ever-evolving situation that we're in right now.
Yeah, and I think, like, there's a couple of historical examples that are very effective in kind of exemplifying how we went about this process. And with COVID-19, and part of the way medical research works is each time there's a new challenge, you know, hopefully we're able to respond faster than we did the previous time that our society was challenged by a, you know, some sort of infectious disease in this particular aspect. And so I think a great example is to look at the Tdap vaccine, which is the vaccine against whooping cough specifically. And this was in the 2000s. The CDC noted that there was an increasing rate of babies that were getting sick and dying from whooping cough, which hadn't been seen in about 30 years since the whooping cough vaccine had been introduced. And they realized that less people were getting the whooping cough vaccine, which is part of the Tdap. It's the AP part of it, the acellular pertussis. And so they rolled out a couple of programs to start vaccinating moms with the whooping cough with the Tdap vaccine to allow moms' immune systems to develop antibodies against the whooping cough. And they had previously seen that those antibodies could be transported across the placenta to baby. And so they did a number of well-designed studies and showed that over time, once they made this recommendation to give moms the whooping cough vaccine at 28 weeks or further, really up to 36 weeks, those maternal antibodies, which are the neutralizing proteins made by your immune system targeted against particular infectious diseases, those could be transported across the placenta and then gave babies protection. And we call that passive immunity for about 6 months. In addition, moms were able to secrete antibodies in their breast milk. And what they saw was a big drop off in the number of whooping cough infections in babies, specifically in moms who had been vaccinated. And those, as the vaccination rates went up, the rates of whooping cough in those babies went down in the first 6 months of life.
Excellent. Man, that's thank you for that example. That really does answer a lot of questions, at least for me. I can imagine that can arm people and inform them with some other examples in history that are similar to what we're going through right now. So now that we've established and made mention of the antibodies being able to pass from mother to child, there you know, again, there's a healthy or unhealthy amount of skepticism around just the safety of the vaccines itself. So, okay, I'm talking to someone about it. I'm like, well, you know, the antibodies can pass from mother to child now. Well, still, I don't think it's safe. Where are some places, what are some resources that we can give to our listeners for them to do their own reading and check out what measures have been taken, what studies have been done to ensure the safety of the vaccine itself?
So there are plenty of very useful resources, right? You can always start off by, if you're listening to this show, pay attention to what's being said. That's a very good resource. Another very good resource is the printed material that we produce along with this show, right? So that's available. It has a lot of the material that we answer during this show. And you have the OHA website that you can look stuff up on, and the CDC website as well. I'm sure Dr. DeMello has other resources that you would like to highlight for us.
Yeah, and I think, as Dr. Dubey said, the CDC's website is really, you know, the cornerstone and usually the starting point for someone who's looking to find out more information for themselves. I think that's a great place. The CDC is very thorough and evaluates all documents are reviewed internally and before they're being published and before data is being shared. And I think, you know, if I'm happy to provide, you know, links to resources as well, specifically from the CDC, but then also if people are more interested in larger studies, I think the ACOG and SMFM websites, and they do have patient portals, are very helpful for people looking for recommendations in lay terms. So things are kind of broken down and explained, and a lot of it's in frequently answered question FAQ format, so that you can, you know, you have your question and they tell you the answers. You know, if you really want to get into the medical literature, PubMed is the repository where all publications are really shared, and it's a searchable database of publications. Now, within PubMed, it can be a little overwhelming and difficult to interpret because all of that literature is going to be using scientific terminology and jargon. So, you know, interpreting statistical results or just reading conclusions can be misleading. That's why I think, you know, going to sources like the CDC and ACOG and the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine or SMFM, those are websites that are curated by experts in the field. And a lot of those people have been studying pregnancy or studying infectious diseases for their entire careers. These are people who have gone on and done advanced degrees. They've done their MDs, they've done PhDs, they've gotten their doctorates, you know, focused on either viral infections, you know, focused on treating infections in pregnancy. And, you know, within for example, ACOG, it's not just a group of OBGYNs who are making these recommendations. It's a group of OBGYNs who have kind of been nominated or selected to serve on a committee. And because of their expertise in, you know, taking care of sick moms who have viral infections in pregnancy, or they are people that worked on either, you know, Zika virus or Ebola, developing the vaccine or developing, you know, other vaccines that are used, you know, recommended in pregnancy, such as the flu vaccine. And they've gotten these experts together in a group, in a committee, and those individuals have then contributed to these recommendations and these documents that are available and distilled down to lay terms for the public.
Yeah, that's great. Those are great, great resources. Throughout the pandemic, throughout the current health crisis that we're in, what are some of the concerns or, you know, most asked questions that you've heard, Dr. DeMello, in your practice?
Yeah, I think, you know, vaccinations were a big question. And before these formal recommendations came out, we would use what we call a shared decision-making model with our patients. Okay. Where we would basically tell them, okay, these are the risks, potential risks, in many ways, theoretical risks of the vaccine. But these are the risks that we know of getting a COVID-19 infection. And, you know, I did my residency training in Detroit, where we had a lot of pregnant moms who were sick with COVID-19, you know, usually. There were one to two that were in the ICU, and here in Oregon, it's similar. There's, you know, COVID-19 moms who are sick with COVID-19, you know, on ventilators in the ICU. So you know, and throughout the country, that has been the trend. Moms tend to get sicker with COVID-19 than the general population, and are at increased risk of developing complications in their pregnancy, such as preeclampsia and fetal growth restriction. So we are watching them closely.
How much more dangerous is it? Like, what are pregnant mothers facing, and are these dangers shared with the child?
And that's a great question. You know, we've, as a field, we've really tried to identify if the virus was being transmitted across the placenta to the baby in utero. And, you know, it's unclear. There have been a couple of case reports, but overall, it seems like the placenta is doing a pretty good job of keeping the virus away from the baby. Wow. That being said, the placenta is likely being damaged by COVID, which is why we're seeing conditions such as preeclampsia, you know, an increased rate of preeclampsia in moms with who are infected with COVID-19. Mm. And so, and indirectly, damage to the placenta is resulting in babies not getting adequate nutrition.
So that's one thing that I wanted to highlight, that what you bring up, Dr. DeMello, and I wanted you to speak to that as well, given that this is your field of expertise. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're seeing significantly more underweight babies, significantly more preterm births in women who are encountering, who are being infected with COVID-19. Can you address that for our audience?
Yeah, so I think, you know, you're talking about, you know, and I think they're both related. I think preterm birth is a big problem, one of the biggest problems in obstetrics right now. And COVID-19 is definitely contributing to that and making it worse. So that is actually multifold. I think one of the first things is that preterm birth, we believe, is caused when moms get an infection. And in some ways, it's a way to protect mom from getting sick if there's an infection, because the best way for mom to defend herself and have her immune system clear infection. And this is taking a step back a little bit of an evolutionary mechanism to protect moms, is to have your baby. This is, again, like one of the theories about why preterm birth occurs. And we think similarly with COVID-19 infection, mom's immune system is getting ramped up to protect mom. And part of that process is also resulting in mom potentially having preterm labor. I think the second reason we're seeing an increased rate of preterm birth with moms who have COVID is iatrogenic or driven by physician interventions. And I think that is because moms get really sick. And when their respiratory system is compromised, especially when they're in the third trimester, delivery can actually help moms recover from their infection. And so, you know, if mom is on, has been on a ventilator for a while and isn't getting better, the general consensus, meaning the general thought within the OB community, is to deliver mom in order to help, you know, her respiratory status improve so she can potentially come off the ventilator. Especially if moms are getting sicker, there may be the need to perform an emergency delivery in order to save mom's life. And that could potentially be at any gestational age, because we know that during pregnancy, the maternal uterus requires more blood flow, and there's this oxygen demand to that uterus that is potentially taking away from mom's ability to recover and fight this infection. In addition, there's the physical size of the uterus within the abdomen. And having a large, you know, moms as it is in the third trimester struggle, they get short of breath walking upstairs, you know, they're walking around and feeling really hot and having a hard time just without having, you know, COVID-19 making things harder. And so, you know, with COVID-19 infection, sometimes just making space in mom's abdomen so that her diaphragm, which is the muscle that helps with breathing, can really get back to normal, will help with her respiratory status. You know, key things we look out for are, you know, we want to make sure that moms can maintain their oxygen levels over 95% during pregnancy when they have a COVID-19 infection. And so if moms are unable to meet those goals, that's what leads to, you know, providing them with supplemental oxygen and then potentially intubation and then, you know, further down potentially delivery. Mm-hmm. And so that's the second part of why there may be an increased rate of preterm birth.
Yeah. So it sounds like there are a lot of factors that lead to preterm births, but the important thing is to highlight the fact that mm-hmm. getting COVID-19 can lead to these complications. And that's why it's important to get vaccinated, right? So that you can protect yourself yeah. from getting these complications that lead to your baby being born much, much earlier than the baby would have liked to come out of the womb.
Right. And I'll tell you that we've seen some moms during their second trimesters, and we're talking about what we call periviable pregnancies between 20 and really 25 weeks, who are coming in with COVID-19 and they're really sick. And they're in a situation where, you know, the chances of baby being delivered at such an early age, really, you know, baby's either not going to survive, or if baby does survive, there's a much higher risk of baby having a lot of neurodevelopmental problems, meaning babies can, you know, have things like cerebral palsy. And, you know, we're having to have these conversations with family members because moms are intubated about what we do if there is an emergency. And those are difficult conversations to have. And, you know, in many ways, COVID-19 is severe symptoms of COVID-19 is becoming preventable with COVID-19 vaccination. And I think, you know, all our really sick moms, you know, none of them have been vaccinated. We have seen some moms who were vaccinated and did have COVID, but they've been primarily asymptomatic or had really mild symptoms.
Mm. Highlighting that vaccines work. DJ, yeah. What are the questions that we're getting from the community?
Yeah. So are there any risks of breastfeeding with women who want to get the vaccine?
So when it comes to breastfeeding, right, we know that the first 6 months of life, baby gets passive immunity from mom. And by that, I mean antibodies are transferred through the breast milk into the baby. And so, and that happens with not just COVID, right? It happens with everything else. Before 6 months, kids are not able to make a sufficient amount of antibodies for themselves. So they rely primarily on their mother's immune system to make these antibodies for them.
Yeah, and just to build on that, you know, we know that like when kids are born, they really won't have their full, load of antibodies till around the age of 4 or 5. And so, the first year of life is really what we focus on when it comes to breastfeeding. And we encourage all our moms to breastfeed because by breastfeeding, you're passing not just nutrition, but also important immune factors to your baby. And we strongly feel that breastfeeding, well, first of all, the COVID vaccine is not going to hurt you or your baby if you are breastfeeding. I want to make that clear.
Yes.
They don't contain a live virus, and they're not going to alter anybody's DNA. Make sure we're completely clear. The vaccine will have mom's immune system making antibodies. And it's not just antibodies. There's also maternal immune cells that get passed through the breast milk, and they go to baby and they help protect baby from infections.
Perfect. If there are still listeners that are out there that are concerned or just having, you know, some level of apprehension around getting the vaccine, what are some of the other steps that pregnant mothers or nursing mothers can take to protect themselves?
Man, that's a very important question, right? Because a lot of people, there are a lot of people who are still in the deliberative phase in terms of whether or not to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So while you're still in the deliberative phase, what we would like to say is encourage you to get vaccinated. But while you're still in the deliberative phase, there are some COVID protective behaviors that you can do that we've been talking about from day one. I feel like a broken record at times when I say this, right? It's, you know, wear your mask and at all times, especially if you're in public places. So mask up indoors at all times, mask up outdoors when there are large crowds, avoid large crowds, right? Because you're encountering people who may not be vaccinated or people who are vaccinated and unfortunately are breakthrough cases. Always maintain good physical distancing, right? You know, and then the last thing, of course, that we've talked about is hand hygiene. You know, wash your hands as much as possible. Make sure you have hand sanitizer readily available to you that you can use. And another plug for vaccines, right? Get vaccinated as quickly as possible. These vaccines are safe and they're effective, even in pregnant women and in women who are currently nursing.
Yeah, and I just want to emphasize again that, you know, vaccines are freely available at this time. You know, they're being covered by all insurances. And I know at OHSU, the pharmacy is giving out, is basically not charging for vaccines and for the COVID-19 vaccine. And so we're encouraging all moms and also dads to go and get vaccinated to reduce the risk to mom and baby when baby is in utero, when mom's still pregnant. But also to reduce the risk after baby's delivered to mom, baby, and the whole family unit.
Yes, we are doing everything we can as a community to make sure vaccines are available to everyone. I'm really, really excited about the turnout we got last Saturday at our vaccine drive here at the museum. It was amazing. Very, very good turnout. My two daughters came down for their second shots. That was good. And we did a live broadcast. We did a live broadcast during that to invite more people to come down. So it's been really, really amazing watching things turn around ever so slightly, but there is some change. Dr. DeMello, we're in the middle of a surge right now. Mm-hmm. Based on the interactions that you've had with your patients, is this surprising? Did you kind of see this trend happening where, you know, without giving out too much information, but
yeah,
did the patients that you were dealing with, did most of them seem, you know, reluctant to take the vaccine and were issuing more concerns versus being more accepting of taking the vaccine?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think part of what we're seeing is that the patients who are coming in specifically pregnant moms in the ICU are coming from more rural areas. Mm. And we're not entirely sure if that's because they don't have as much access to the vaccine. And I don't think that's the case. I think right. There's a little bit more hesitancy in those communities because, you know, they may not have as many resources as the urban areas do, where people are constantly advocating and really encouraging people to get their vaccines. And I think that comes from their, you know, potentially their community leaders, local leadership. You know, on a state level, all states are really saying, hey, for the most part, are saying, hey, go get your vaccines. And I think the states that aren't necessarily doing that, you're seeing higher rates of COVID-19 infection there.
Right.
There are these correlations. Now, is that causative? It's hard to say. But yeah, you know, for the most part, these are moms who weren't vaccinated. And, you know, when we were talking to them after they're out of the ICU, they're saying, and this is again, anecdotal, you know, moms are saying, hey, I told all my friends and family, go get vaccinated because this is not fun to be in the ICU. Being in the ICU, you know, people don't necessarily realize this, but it's not just that you have a breathing tube in you that's breathing for you. You're just immobilized and really kind of, sedated to a certain level. Yeah. And being in the ICU for a long period of time, your body loses strength. You're not able to eat food, and recovery takes sometimes twice as long as the time that you spent in the ICU, which I think is something people don't appreciate as well. And the COVID-19 vaccine, you know, there are very small risks, but those risks are vastly outweighed by, the benefit of not getting COVID-19 infection, specifically getting a serious infection or severe infection with COVID-19. And I think, you know, if you look at, like, I think physicians, the American Medical Association published, I think it was 96% of physicians were vaccinated as of the end of July, which I think speaks to, you know, the people that are dealing with this all the time, recognizing that this is a problem and you know, we should get vaccinated. I think, vaccine hesitancy, it's natural to question, you know, authority and recommendations. I think that's normal, and it's healthy to do that. But I think you also have to look at the other side of things, which is the risk that you're taking on by avoiding the vaccine. And I'd be glad to hear what you guys think. And, you know, Dr. Dubé, being on more of like a higher level, within the state and seeing how the state has been responding and the numbers here, you know, you probably have a little bit more insight, because again, I'm speaking from anecdotal experiences.
Yeah. So you spoke the truth right there, my man. You spoke the truth. So what we're seeing and what we have seen all along is that at least since rolling out the vaccines, right, in December of 2020 and January of 2021, what we've seen is people who are vaccinated, in some cases end up being a breakthrough case, don't end up as sick as those that are not vaccinated, which makes a strong case for the vaccines. Right now, as a state, we're at about 75% in terms of vaccination rates for the entire state. And it's good that we're seeing an uptick in the vaccination rates in the last, I'd say, 2-3 weeks, in part because people who haven't been vaccinated are seeing others getting sick, and that's motivating them to get vaccinated. As you know, remember how we started talking about this, DJ? It was the vaccination rates in the Black folks in the Black community were incredibly low. They're still low, and the hospitalization rates in the Black community were very, very high compared to those in the white community, in the Portland metro and in the rest of the country. And that was because Black folks were not vaccinated at the same rates. To this day, it's still the same. I mean, there's a 20-point difference between Black folks and the rest of the state. We're almost at about 55% vaccination rate among Black folks in the Portland metro. So we're making progress. When we started this show, we were at about 40%. We're heading in the right direction. We can now say that it is now the norm to be vaccinated in the Black community than not. So another plea, effort to say, Black folks, please, let's get vaccinated. Let's do the right thing. Let's protect ourselves. Let's protect our communities. And get vaccinated.
Yeah, that's excellent progress. You know, we still have more work to do. We're not going to let up, but that is good news. That's definitely good news. We always talk about our sense of community and having a responsibility to each other. And I think this particular episode, honing in on mothers, really highlights that point. You know, having a responsibility to your child, to make sure you're creating the most safe environment for them. So if you have apprehensions about being vaccinated, please wear a mask, stay away from crowds, stay away from as many people that are unvaccinated as possible. And then take the time to do the research, take the time to do the reading, take the time to listen to a couple of these episodes to get the information that you need so you can get vaccinated. Again, you know, creating a safe environment for you and your child. Thank you so much. This was an amazing episode. I cannot wait to get this out. Man, this is really good. Thank you so much, Dr. DeMello.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for having me on. I just want to second, again, I keep seconding things because I want to emphasize that vaccines are going to be how we get through this. Vaccines are going to carry our society through COVID-19. And you know, we're talking about moms looking out for themselves and their babies, but also those people who are with mom, you know, whether it's dad, you know, grandparents, siblings, uncle and aunt, you know, it's the whole community. You got to think about the most vulnerable. And those are the people that have, you know, medical conditions, who are immunosuppressed, you know, cancer survivors, and then pregnant moms. If you live with those people, you're in contact with those people, don't do it for yourself, do it for them. You know, this is a community effort.
Totally. Totally. Again, thank you, Dr. DeMello, for joining us. DJ, it's always good to see you.
Good to
have these conversations. I just wanted to say one last thing. Mm-hmm. Last week, I butchered Kaletia Lewis's name, and I wanted to apologize on air for that because I heard it on the radio and I was like, oh shoot, I said the wrong thing. I butchered her name. And I am so sorry for that, Kaletia. And thank you for all the work you're doing at North by Northeast Clinic and serving the community.
Absolutely. All right, now we will catch you guys next week. Make sure you're following us and sharing these episodes to as many people as you can. Let's get the word out and let's get these vaccination rates up.
All right. And I'll share some resources with you too, so you can get that out there to people. You know, there's no increased rate of miscarriages and things. We want to make sure all those myths are dispelled. So thank you so much for having me on, giving me this opportunity to share, you know, what we're seeing on the front lines with the community and get that vaccine.
Yes. All right, now.
All right, my man. Thanks. Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.